Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hello and welcome back to the second episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. I am your co-host, Jason Hunt, and with me today, as always, is the man behind the curtain. We have Carl LeClaire.
Hello again, Jason. How you doing today, bud?
I'm doing great. Let's jump right into our topic. I'm excited about this one.
Oh, as am I. So, you guys were listening last week. We recorded our favorite moments from the prequel trilogy. And the plan, of course, was to record our favorite moments from all six films. That was just simply impossible to do in a 45-minute to one-hour segment. So today what we'll be doing is jumping into the movies that started it all, the original trilogy. I am an OT guy, so I am extremely amped. And we're going to start back in 1977 when Jason and I were nothing but unborn fetuses. So, Jason, take it away, my friend. What scene first jumps out to you when you think of A New Hope?
Well, with A New Hope, honestly, the first scene that comes to my mind is the first scene.
Huh.
The opening shot that we get at the beginning of the movie. It pans down after the crawl over Tatooine. Rebel blockade runner shoots overhead, firing back over our heads, and then the Star Destroyer just slowly, increasingly bigger, just comes over the screen. And it's just that shot at 7 years old is what hooked me into Star Wars. And if my parents had never taken me to see that, or if my parents had taken me to see any of the other movies first, I don't know if I would have been so into Star Wars at the beginning. But that shot just hooked me into Star Wars from the get-go. And the rest of the story is history. So,
absolutely. I like that you bring that up. That's my favorite. That's the first scene that pops out of me too, as well, with A New Hope. And again, it's clear you and I were both not alive when this movie first came out. And it was A New Hope was not the first movie I saw, but when I first saw that scene, like you said, you pan down from this awesome scroll, and here comes these two sweet looking ships. I mean, I love the blockade runner anyway. I mean, the Tana IV is such a good-looking ship.
Oh, yeah.
And just these two ships hammering it out, you're immediately drawn in. And just when you thought, like, it couldn't get any cooler, all of a sudden you have the stormtroopers invading the hallways of the Tana IV. And it's just great. I mean, the movie begins with such tremendous action. It's fantastic.
It's George Lucas definitely thought that opening sequence out very carefully in order to get your attention for the rest of the film. It worked.
Yeah.
I first saw these movies when they released them as the special edition in 1997, and Star Wars was the third movie I ever saw in the movie theater. I had seen Toy Story and Lion King, and that was it. So this was the first time I'd seen anything like this, and it was just jaw-dropping amazing, and my life changed forever, so.
Yes. Yeah, that scene is fantastic. And this was obviously the first Star Wars movie I saw in theaters as well. Also like you in 97 with the special edition. And just seeing that scene on the big screen as opposed to my little TV at my parents' house, I mean, was phenomenal. It just, you get swept right into it.
So, yeah, definitely. And what a wild ride it ended up being.
Indeed. Great scene. So, what else you got, bud? I know you have a couple more than I do for A New Hope, so why don't you give us another one? Maybe it'll be one of my other ones as well.
Okay. My second scene from A New Hope that I always jumps to my mind is the cantina scene.
Me too.
So, and it's not, and to be perfectly honest, it's not anything to do with Han, Luke, Obi-Wan, Chewbacca. It's just everything else around them. All the aliens, the music, and that was just that sequence there just completely, as if my imagination wasn't being blown already, that sequence just like sent it to another universe. Sent my imagination to another universe. And I've always had a very active imagination, but after seeing that sequence and seeing Star Wars in general, my imagination knew no limits. And just the idea of all of those different creatures and aliens that made me start looking around corners and, you know, dark alleys, seeing if there was anybody, you know, any Star Wars people, you know, hiding back there where I couldn't see them, you know, at 7 years old. So I just loved the variety and the craziness that scene had in it. Not to say that, you know, Han and Chewie introducing us to them wasn't cool as well, but it was just the entire environment of that scene was something that blew my mind.
Exactly. I agree. You know, I'm a huge Han fan, and of course this is the scene where we're introduced to Han Solo, but even all of that aside, that's not even what makes the scene for me. I think as soon as Luke and Obi-Wan walk through those doors, and you just, first off, the music. I love that music. I know there's quite a few fans out there that find that Cantina Band song a bit annoying, but I love it. And you just walk in, and this music starts, and then that one alien creature's head just shoots up like a turtle out of its shell. And it's phenomenal, like you said. You know, especially for a child with such a vivid imagination on my own, to see the scene, the amount of creatures, and, you know, there's so many different aliens, and it's just, the bar itself just looks like a sweet bar. I mean, you know, that would be a great idea for, you know, C6. They should set up a bar for the, you know, the adult guests that looks exactly like the Mos Eisley bar. I mean, that would be so sweet. You know,
that would
and
be awesome.
Have everything be called blue milk, no matter what the drink is, you know? And it would be phenomenal. You get a guy dressed up as you know, however you say that guy's name, the bartender. But yeah, I mean, it's just such a phenomenal scene. And, you know, you feel like you're walking into the dredge of society when you step into the cantina, and everything about it is just so cool. It's, you know, it's such a dirty place too. And again, that's something I really like, and you know, as opposed to the prequels where everything is so fancy and nice, which again, I mean, I understand why. They're, you know, it's at Coruscant and everything is classy, and, you know, or at Naboo where everything's clean. But Tatooine is this gross planet, and you walk into the bar, and even the bar is gross. But there's something so cool about it. You want to be there. So, you know, if you are working on C6 and you're listening right now, suggest that to them. We want the Cantina Bar to have our drinks at each night we're there.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Anyway, so, and as we're talking about this, I forgot that I do have a third scene, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's yours as well. So I'll let you go ahead and say it, and if it's not, then I'll say mine after. But what else were you thinking of?
Okay, my third scene for A New Hope is the battle for the Death Star at the end, when the Rebels fly out in their X-Wings to take out the Death Star.
Okay, that is not mine, but I will let you... Yeah, please say more.
Okay, at this point in the movie, when I first saw it, Luke was my favorite character, and I was just, like, so on the edge of my seat watching this. And when the great shots that they have of these X-Wings flying over the Death Star and then dipping into the trench and hurtling down this trench to blow up the Death Star, all the shots that they did that with, it made me feel like I was Luke. I either was Luke or was right there with Luke flying through the trench to blow up the Death Star. And if we didn't do this together, if we weren't successful, Darth Vader was going to get us. So, you know, this is my 7-year-old mind, and I'm just like, so, but even looking back at it later now, it's still one of my favorite scenes. Just the dog fights with the starfighters is really, really cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, it's not particularly one of my favorite scenes, which is odd because it's probably the most central scene to the movie. I mean, the movie is so well bracketed with an awesome opening battle where the good guys just get owned, and then at the end where you wouldn't expect them to have a chance. I mean, they pull out by the narrowest of margins. And You know, it was so cool to see this awesome battle in space, not to mention, you know, the sound of TIE fighters screaming all over the place. I mean, those things were so cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think that sound was in my dream. The TIE fighters was chasing me in my dreams for the next couple weeks after seeing the movie.
That's great.
I'm not joking. So
that is great. Yeah. So,
what's your third scene?
So,
for New Hope?
My third scene is quite small, and I've heard this before on other podcasts, people mentioning it. So, I hate not being original, but whatever. It's Star Wars. We love it all, and it's the scene with Luke looking off into the sunset.
Of course.
And this is such a memorable scene in Star Wars as a franchise, anyway. But you know, the original trilogy is the story of Luke Skywalker, even though George Lucas makes it clear that the movies are about, you know, Anakin's fall and redemption, and that's quite clear. But, you know, the title of Star Wars Episode 4 is A New Hope. Luke is that hope. And you mm-hmm. see him just, you know, it's really funny, actually, just after watching the Blu-rays so much in the last few weeks, I really found myself drawn into A New Hope in a way that I hadn't been in the past. A New Hope was always my least favorite of the original trilogy. I would still say it probably is, but I found such a new appreciation for it just in the past couple of months here. And that scene where Luke is, I mean, it just seems like his life is just, it's garbage. It's so boring. I mean, he gets up every day and does the same thing every day. He's working on this farm. He has really no friends. I mean, his sense of community are droids and his miserable uncle and his aunt. You know, maybe it's...
How would you like living with that grumpy uncle all the time?
I know it, exactly. And maybe it's just the part of me that's, you know, doing the adult life now where I get up and do the same job every day. Not that my job's bad, but, you know, you watch Luke walk out of that, you know, incredibly awesome-looking homestead anyway and just stares off into the space and into that sunset and that music of John Williams during that scene when... The first time you really hear prominently the Force theme played, and it's just so beautiful. And you see in his eyes, you see in this person just a desire for so much more, you know. And I think that speaks to so many people when he's looking off into that sunset. I mean, it's such a cliche scene, really, but there's something that just grabs you and says, you know, there. So many of us just suppress what we really want, and Luke is just looking off into the future, just wanting so much more out of his life, and. I think that connects with so many people, which is what makes that scene so powerful, even though it's 30 seconds long.
Right. The imagery that George Lucas uses in these films is astounding, and it connects with you in ways that you don't even know how or why it's connecting with you. You just know that it's part of you, and it's really something that I don't think many movies ever come close to achieving. So
exactly. Yeah, so great. So that's our take on A New Hope. Some great scenes there, Jason. And now I'm very excited to move to Empire, which for me and a lot of people is my favorite movie of the Star Wars saga. Empire is just, to me, it's the perfect movie. You know, characterization is phenomenal. It's a great script. It's a great story. And there's so much in there. And I found it tough to narrow it down to just the few that I have, but I know you have quite a few as well, and I'm curious, is Empire your favorite, Jason?
Of the original trilogy, Jedi is my favorite.
That's right, yeah.
But not that I don't like any of the other movies. I'm one of those people that I look at the whole saga as a complete story. And so it's hard for me to sometimes break things up into, well, this is my favorite movie and that's my favorite movie, because each of them have favorite moments for me. And sometimes my favorite section is, you know, half of this movie and half of that movie smushed together or things like that. I'm weird like that. But I would have to say of the original trilogy, the Return of the Jedi probably has the most wear on my DVD. So
sure. Great. Well, yeah, let's talk about some of these scenes that we picked for Empire. Would you like me to start, or do you want to start?
You go ahead and start this time.
Okay. So, my first scene, I'm not going to go in order necessarily, but my first scene has to do with the conflict on Cloud City. I love the Cloud City stuff. I've always said that if I could live anywhere in the world, it would be Cloud City, which, granted, is not existent, but I'd like it to be. And the first scene that always jumps out to me in Empire is actually the scene when Lando takes them into the dining room and Vader's there. And again, like I said, when I was a kid, Han was always my favorite character. And I still love Han. I'm a huge fan of Han. And it's finally, you get to see, oh my God, what would happen if Han Solo went against Vader? I mean, Vader, you know, he's the ultimate bad guy, and I love Han. So it's like, what's going to happen if Han Solo has to deal with Vader?
And that's one of my scenes as well.
Yeah, he draws on him so fast. And Vader just, it's like nothing to him, which ticks me off to this day. I'm like, oh, come on. Couldn't he get one shot in? Come on. I just love that scene. And, you know, the first time you see it, you do not see that coming, which is what makes it even greater. You know, Billy Dee plays Lando so well. You know, here you are thinking this guy's going to save them. They're going to be great. Opens that door and, I mean, everything they were hoping for is just crushed. And Han Solo.
As soon as that door opens, I think I jumped in my seat. I was like, oh my gosh, why is Darth Vader there?
Who invited him?
He's supposed to be running off on the other side of the galaxy now looking for these people. Why is he there?
Oh yeah, it's great. And then Boba Fett comes in with his spurs clicking. Oh, it's such a phenomenal scene.
Yeah, it's a great little sequence there. And he's, you know, Vader is... you know, he's just in complete control of the situation. I mean, he's got Lando on a leash here. He's, you know, got Han's blaster in a split second. And
yeah,
the stormtroopers just surround them. And he's like, we would be honored if you would join us, you know. And
yeah,
they go in and they close the door. And it's like, what happened during that dinner?
Oh, God, I am right with you.
When I was seven, though, the first thought in my head was, how does Darth Vader eat?
Yeah, that scene, again, yeah. You know, like, do they really stop to have a bite to eat? Why would they want to eat now? And, you know, there's been a couple of takes on it. Like, I'm sure you've seen the robot chicken where they're having dinner. And, you know, they're all making jokes at each other. And it's hilarious, that scene in Robot Chicken. And then there's also the radio dramas. Have you ever heard the radio drama for Empire?
I have not heard the complete radio drama for Empire yet. I haven't gotten to that point yet.
Okay. So, yeah. But. Well, a quick little shout out to my boys at the Sarlacc Pit. They're currently playing that at the end of each of their episodes. So
I'm listening to it.
Great. So. Yeah. If you're looking to hear the Empire radio drama, tune into the Sarlacc Pit. In the radio version, it's great. After the doors close, Han and Chewie decide they're going to take Vader on fist to fist, basically, and Vader taunts them, trying to get them to bring it on, but Lando is able to talk them down because Vader makes it very clear that he'll hold Han down no problem. He'll kill Chewie just for trying. So it's pretty intense scene. It's really cool. But yeah, I'm
looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it'll be good. So anyway, what about you? What's another scene that jumps out for you?
Well, one of my other scenes I had a similar reaction to is the cave on Dagobah.
Okay.
When Luke goes into the cave, and obviously now that I'm older, there's so much greater significance and greater depth to this scene. But when I first saw it, you know, I didn't like Dagobah to begin with because it was gross and creepy and dark. But when he goes down into this cave past the snakes and the lizards, I'm just like, eh. And then Darth Vader comes around the corner, and I'm like, how did he get there? You know? So, such a similar reaction to the previous scene that we just talked about. But that just freaked me out, because I was like, there's no way Luke can do anything to him at this point. And then, of course, he cuts off Vader's head, and I'm like, what?
The movies are over? Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That is,
but of course, now there's so much more depth to that interchange there, that sequence there. But I'll let you comment.
Yeah, I too. It's not one of my favorite scenes, but I do love that scene. And unlike it's funny. My impression of Dagobah when I was a kid, I also hated Dagobah. It was just this cold, dark, kind of scary, spooky place. And also, when I was young, I found a lot of the Yoda stuff kind of boring. I loved I loved Yoda, but I found that stuff a bit boring. It wasn't until I got older did I realize, like, what Luke is really going through here. And just like you said, you know, when he fights Vader and then cuts his head off, I was like, what just happened there? And then his face shows up in the, you know, the mask. I'm like, what the hell is this? What's going on? I was so confused when I was younger. But now that I'm older and, you know, it's very apparent, especially if you listen to the commentaries by Lucas and Kirshner, you know, this scene is actually quite powerful. Luke is coming to terms with what he's really fighting here is himself. He's fighting his own inner demons, which is, it's such a phenomenal scene.
Yeah. And, you know, he's fighting what looks to be, according to his eyes, the embodiment of what he has defined as evil. And then once he's successful, he cuts the head off, and then it shows his face in the mask. It's his own face, and that completely, and if you look at his in the scene there, and it cuts back to Luke, and as he's staring at that, he's just completely shaken to the core there, because he now realizes that while Vader may be, you know, the object of, you know, right now, the object of what he defines as his not his rage, but his the object of what he needs to defeat, Yoda is saying, no, it's not Vader, it's you. You need to overcome you so that becomes attainable, so that Vader becomes attainable.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, one of my first impressions of trying to interpret that scene was, oh, this is saying Luke has the potential to be Darth Vader, which I think is part of it. Luke does have that potential because he's got all that hatred and rage inside. But the lesson there is, again, it's I think it's so well done too. You know, he descends into this dark, you know, nasty cave. I mean, it's like he's literally descending into the darkest part of himself, and it's only there that he's able to face his deepest fears. And, you know, his deepest fear is that he too will become Darth Vader. And, you know, in that scene, he's able to rise above it.
The great thing about that scene is that no matter how many times you watch it, there's always something new that you can interpret from it.
Exactly.
Which I think is the beauty of that sequence there. So
exactly. And that's the sign of good movie making. I mean, I teach theology to high school kids, and, you know, I teach them the Bible essentially every day. And, you know, I always tell them, you know, the Bible's a great book because you can read it every day for the rest of your life and you'll always find something new. And I think that's the art of good storytelling, the art of good writing. And that's exactly what you have with these films, is especially a scene like that. There's such depth to it. You can always draw something new from it.
Exactly.
So anyway, I think we beat that one pretty good.
that one's pretty good. What's another one of your scenes?
Okay, so my next scene is actually a bit in connection with the other one. I've got two Han scenes and two Luke scenes, so I'll do my other Han scene now. And this is a very odd scene. I'm probably one of the only people to consider this one of their favorite scenes in Star Wars, and it's a bit sick, and I'm a bit nervous to share it. My cousins always made fun of me growing up for loving the scene, but it's the scene where Han is tortured. I don't know why, I just love that scene. Maybe part of it's Harrison Ford has a great scream. I love a good scream in a movie. I just find it phenomenal. And I was so, so ticked off when the Blu-rays came out and they didn't include the deleted scene, because evidently that scene was originally a little bit longer and you could see a lot more of the machine in action. And I was so ticked they didn't include that on the Blu-rays. And again, I don't know what it is about that scene, but there's just something about that scene that I really enjoy. And maybe it's just seeing how, you know, how badass Darth Vader is, and he's willing to do anything to get Luke, and even just torture this guy for no reason whatsoever.
Right. I mean, that's a very good scene to show how in control Vader is. Still, he has got everything in his grasp, and that's pretty much the way the movie goes. Except obviously Luke manages to escape him. But up until that point, everything. Vader has everything in control.
Right.
And he's doing it, and it's not just pointless torture. He is doing it to get Luke.
Yeah.
But that scene when I was younger, that always made me cringe, and I was just like, oh no. And
yeah.
The scream was the worst part of it for me, you know. him getting, you know, shocked and, you know, flinching at that, that was, I flinched a little bit there, but the scream, I was just like, ah, you know.
Yeah.
And then Boba Fett just staring Lando down the whole time. It's just, on top of it, it was just crazy how, you know, Lando is being used and he doesn't like it. And everybody knows Lando doesn't like being used, but he doesn't have any other choice.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And I can remember this was always the scene. My cousins, Ricky and Andrew, I used to lay up at night when I would sleep at their house, bugging the hell out of them, just because I didn't understand it when I was a kid. I know I liked it, which again, kind of messed up, but I would ask them all the time. I was confused by it. I was like, I don't get why they're doing this. What are they doing to him? And I used to lay up for nights and ask them about it and bug them. My one cousin he's a few years older than I am, so he's a little bit brighter than me, I guess, back then. And he was like, he's just doing it to get, you know, so Luke can sense his pain. That's the only reason. There's not much to it. It's a very simple scene. You're talking about this way too much. And they used to be a little, you know, curious as to why I enjoyed it. So, but enough of that. What else you got, Jason?
One of my other scenes is actually another memorable moment is from Dagobah. And it's probably, as I've gotten older, it's taken on, you know, I like it for different reasons, but it was memorable for me for when I first saw it because of how freaked out I was about it. And I couldn't explain why I was freaked out. And this was the scene where we were introduced to Yoda.
Okay.
It just freaked me out because Dagobah in general was creepy. And then all of a sudden, this little green, crazy, laughing elf shows up. And he just starts destroying Luke's camp, and he's just like, you know, come, you know. And he's like, come, you know, I'm like, that guy is freaky, you know. I for some reason, until later on when he was balancing on Luke's foot while Luke was doing the handstand, up until that point, I didn't trust Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't trust Yoda at all, and I remember bugging my mom in the theater going, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Because I didn't want to watch it if I knew – if Luke was going to get in trouble, I didn't want to watch it. And so I was just like, what's going to happen? What's he going to do to Luke? And my mom was just like, just watch the movie. but obviously now that I'm older, I like that for other reasons because, you know, Yoda is such a great character. He's obviously putting on this – facade, you know, to test Luke, to see what Luke's motivations are.
Yeah.
And but later on, once they're in the hut, the other part of that sequence that when I was younger scared me was when Luke says, "I'm not afraid," and Yoda just leans in, "You will be. You will be." You know, I was just like, "Oh my gosh!"
Yep. Yeah.
This is not somebody. Why is young Obi-Wan even talking to him? Why, he's not a nice person. but yeah. Of course, later on in the movie, I loved Yoda. By the end of the movie, I thought Yoda was great. But when I first saw it, he freaked me out. So I don't know. That's why it's memorable for me.
Yeah. I love that scene as well. It's actually not one of mine, but I do have another, you know, one that is connected to Yoda. And that is true. I mean, when Yoda first shows up, he's like this creepy little creature. And actually, one of my favorite images in the entire film is that scene when he's walking off into the swamp and he's got Luke's little lamp now and he's saying, come. And, you know, I just love that. It's such a dark backdrop. And here's this wise little creature just inviting Luke along. And, you know, again, he's testing Luke. And I like what you just said. You know, I mean, he's trying to draw what is Luke really in this for? Is he in this for revenge or is he in this for the good of the galaxy? And, you know, Yoda tests that out of him. And just like you said, the way that scene ends, the, you know, I'm not afraid. Oh, my God. Just the way Yoda responds. When I was a kid, I was like, why has he got to be afraid? What's going to happen? You know, I mean, it's the way Frank Oz delivers that line so incredibly. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's Yoda is such... For a quote-unquote minor character to the saga, he is such a powerful figure in Star Wars. And, you know, without in some cases with you know, just barely lifting a finger.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, obviously in the prequels we get to see him, you know, whip out his lightsaber and do some, you know, damage that way. But he's such a powerful, well-respected, you know, high stature figure who's, of course, only 2.5 feet tall and green.
Right.
But I don't know. It's sequences, scenes like that where, you know, and I credit Mark Hamill's acting to this as well.
Sure.
Where he completely pulls off why he is top dog, why he is the greatest Jedi at this point. So
absolutely. So, well, with that, I'm going to go ahead and jump into my next scene here. And it's basically, I refer to it as Yoda's discourse on the Force. So it's that scene in which Luke attempts to raise his X-Wing out of the swamp and fails. So I'm going to go ahead and play that clip real quick from the film so we can listen to what Yoda has to say about the Force.
Okay.
I can't. It's too big. Size matters not. Look at me. Judge me by my size, do you? And where you should not. For my ally is the Force, and the powerful ally it is. Life creates it, makes it grow. Its energy surrounds us, and binds us. Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. You must feel the Force around you. You, between you, me, the three, the rock. Everywhere. Yes. Even between the land and the ship.
You want the impossible.
I love that scene. I think it's a wonderful scene because this is Luke. He's doubting himself. He doesn't think he can do this. He just fails at raising this X-Wing. And Yoda just goes into talking about the essence of what the Force is, the essence of what life is. And, you know, he's going to essentially tell us what the Force is. I mean, the Force is, it's this, you know, it's this energy which surrounds them and it allows them to tap into it and become, you know, who they're supposed to be. And it's just such a great, you know, this is Yoda the philosopher. This is Yoda the religious teacher. This is what makes Yoda who he is. He is a man of great words, you know, as well as actions. But here he delivers to Luke the essence of what the Force is. And he's saying to Luke that anything is possible with the Force. The Force is, you know, he's constantly saying to him, unlearn what you have learned. It's this great idea that Luke's not getting it. He keeps looking at everything in such a narrow way. And the Force can't be narrowed down like that. And it's just, it's a wonderful scene.
Yeah, it's very good. I like how he explains the Force, the essence of the Force, but there's still so much mystery to it as well, which is the great part of that scene, is that, you know, he's only scratching the surface with what the Force really is. And he does it so, even though he talks backwards, he does it so eloquently.
Yes.
And that's also a very, very great scene. And obviously one of the iconic scenes from this film.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, like you said too, you know, he's scratching the surface. He can't give you everything. And what he's saying here is the Force is essentially, you know, feel the Force. You must feel the Force. It's not, again, it's not an idea Luke has to come to wrap his head around. It's rather this it's something he can experience, but he has to learn how to open himself to it. And I love that. Especially, like I said, I mean, as a theology teacher, I love this scene because it's very similar to our concept of God. And, you know, it's about opening yourself to it rather than just understanding it. And that's the mystery of the Force. It's something not to be understood, you know, like an algorithm in math. It's something to be felt and experienced and used. And
right.
And I love that. Yoda explains that so well.
It's got incredible, if you want to look at it that way, it's got such incredible religious undertones or overtones, whatever you want to however you want to put that. But it's true, like you said, you know, it's something not to be intellectualized. It's something to be experienced and to be felt and to open yourself up to. And that's something that I think a lot of people ended up regretting wanting to intellectualize the Force, because when they, you know, kept clamoring for an explanation, you know, Lucas gave them the Medichlorians in the prequels, but then they were like, oh.
Yeah. Barf.
Okay, never mind.
No, thank you, George. Yeah.
Which, he never mentioned them again, which I think is a good move.
Right.
But still, I mean, it's not something to be intellectualized. It's something to be experienced and to be a part of.
Right.
So,
and I think, you know, that's George Lucas time and time again says how, you know, one of his purposes in first making the Star Wars films is to bring a sense of mystery and mysticism, spirituality back to people's lives, especially to young people's lives. You know, in a world, especially today, that is, it is so corrupted by, you know, crummy religion, but it's a way of recognizing that there is a mystery to life, and Yoda here is encouraging Luke to tap into that mystery, and I love it. It's phenomenal. So
yeah,
it's enough adjectives, I think. So why don't you go ahead and give me another scene of yours?
Okay, this is the last scene I have for Empire.
Okay,
and it's probably something that most everyone has as a most memorable moment for the movie. So forgive me, everybody, for being cliche, but no, I am your father. So
absolutely.
That revelation at 7 years old, I was just like, no. So basically I was right along with Luke in yelling, no, that's not true. That's impossible. At 7 years old, I was like, no, how can this evil, bad man, how can he be Luke's father?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. That can't be true. That's, you know, and I remember walking out of the movie theater on the way home, you know, asking my mom, is he really Luke's father? You know, is that really? And she's like, yes. Yes, and my mom is someone who, when Star Wars came out in 77, she watched it 11 times in the same theater. So she knows Star Wars. She's a fan of Star Wars. And so I got a lot of answers from her probably before seeing Return of the Jedi. It was one of those – that's just a memorable sequence. Simply, if you're – introducing people to the movies 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, then that is going to be the most mind-blowing revelation in the movies to date.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I would introduce people to the movies in that order yet. I haven't figured that out yet. I haven't figured out how I would introduce people to Star Wars.
Sure.
But that is still, even if you do watch it 1 through 6, that is still such a pivotal moment in the films, because, I mean, Vader has just recently come to the realization that he has children, that they survived. Of course, he just thinks it's the one kid, you know, with Luke. And, of course, this is the biggest revelation to hit Luke ever.
Right.
So the man that he thought that he had to kill because he is the source of evil in the galaxy is his dad. I mean, that's not something to just sit down and talk over, you know, address over a cup of coffee. So,
right. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is probably the most iconic scene in Star Wars. I mean, it's what put Star Wars on the map. It blew everyone's mind. I remember Empire being the first. I still can't remember if Empire or Jedi was the first one I saw when I was real young. I know I was young, but I don't remember being shocked at that scene. I understood the you know, the immensity of what was being said, but I don't remember being shocked. But, I mean, again, I can't imagine what it was like for the people in the 80s. Like, holy crap, what are you talking? You're lying. No way. And Mark Hamill's reaction is absolutely phenomenal. And this scene is, I mean, how many times have we heard that scene redone, you know, in so many other films, so many other references in pop culture of the I am your father. I mean, this scene shakes up Star Wars. It's what gets you realizing that maybe there is something more to Darth Vader than meets the eye.
Right. Right. And what's even funnier is that during filming, even the actors that knew, you know, and only Mark Hamill and James Earl Jones, as far as the actors were concerned, knew before the movie came out.
Right.
They still thought he was lying. You know, they thought, oh, that can't be true. Is that really? No, that's not true.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Right.
But of course, you know, later on they find out that is true and it's like, oh, wow. But it's something that at that would have been very interesting to experience in 1980, to see that with everyone else and experience that as a collective revelation, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so powerful, and not to mention that the scenery in that scene is great too.
And
like you said, I mean, nobody knew about this except Mark Hamill and George Lucas, Kirshner, and James Earl Jones. Even David Prowse, because I guess, well, evidently David Prowse had a big mouth back in those days, so they didn't tell him a whole lot of anything. but, yeah, I mean, just a great scene. So, and so that pretty much piggybacks right into my last scene from Empire as well, which is, again, probably nothing new for a lot of you listeners, but the duel between Luke and Vader and Empire is phenomenal. Again, last show we talked about, you know, that we mentioned, you know, the duel in episode 1 and the duel in episode 3, and Jason, I believe you even mentioned, you know, the Dooku Yoda duel from episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
The prequel duels are phenomenal because of their speed and intensity, and they are well choreographed. But the duel in Empire, I mean, to me it puts to shame the duel in A New Hope. I mean, Obi-Wan versus Darth Vader in the Death Star is a great scene, and it's cool as the first lightsaber duel. But it's slow, it's a little like, okay, whatever. But Luke versus Vader, I mean, this is a scene you've been waiting for since the end of A New Hope. And just the domination Vader reigns over Luke. I mean, he is just owning him the whole time. And it's just phenomenal. You see how powerful Darth Vader is. And really, how much Luke's got left to learn. How much training he has left. And, I mean, the scene, again, the scenery. I'm a huge fan of the scenery of the Star Wars films. And, you know, it starts in the carbonite chamber, which I love the colors of the carbonite chamber. It's just dark and then this, you know, this harsh orange color. And he walks in. And I love it when all the little doors close, all his little escape pods close off. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you hear Vader start to breathe. And Luke looks at the blaster in his hand, almost like, uh-uh, this ain't going to work. And he holsters it. And, you know, then Vader speaks, you know, about, you know, you know, the Force is with you, Skywalker, but you're not a Jedi yet. And boom, then it's time to go on. And again, this is not the most fast and intense duels, especially in light of the prequels. But just the mental capacity and the sheer, you know, emotional beatdown Vader is giving Luke. I mean, again, he could have killed Luke probably 2 seconds into the duel. But he draws it out and just drains Luke so much. I mean, again, and then to cap it off with what you were just talking about, once he's cut off Luke's hand, Luke is physically exhausted, he is emotionally exhausted from probably realizing, wow, I had no idea how hard this was going to be. And now he's got to sit with this truth that this man who could have easily killed him is his father. I mean, just an incredibly well done scene.
Yeah. The duel, the way I look at the duels, in the prequel trilogy versus the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy is all about the skill and the physical abilities of the participants, whereas the duels in the original trilogy are much weightier as far as the emotional content and the as far as the emotional content is concerned. This duel between Vader and Luke is just emotionally heavy from start to finish.
Yeah.
And which makes it such a great sequence. So it's, and you can tell from the get-go that Vader is just toying with Luke, and he could have killed him, you know, instantly. He probably wouldn't even had to let He could have just choked him from across the room if he wanted to.
Right.
So, or choked him as he was flying his X-Wing into Cloud City or something. I don't know. I mean, but he wanted this confrontation. Vader wanted this confrontation for a reason.
Yep.
And obviously the quote-unquote reason why he wanted to do that was to take him to the Emperor.
Right.
But that's not really what Vader was after. He was after, you know, confirming that this was his son and telling Luke of the relationship there, and that in order to try and entice him to join him. From Vader's perspective, I mean, obviously he has multiple reasons for wanting Luke to join him. You know, one, so he can overthrow Palpatine, because that's what Sith do. Two, it's in sort of a twisted way, it's the father wanting to reach out and wanting to have his son with him. But, you know, since he has been so corrupted, it kind of comes out, you know, with a hand missing and everything. So.
Right. Going back to that theme you said earlier about how Vader is always in control in Empire. That's exactly what's happening here. He is in control. And like you said, I mean, yeah, he could have killed Luke with ease at any point in this duel. And even like you said, before he even got to Cloud City. But Vader wants him. He wants Luke. You know, and it's a very similar scene to what happens in Episode 3 where Luke is trying to entice Padme to join him, you know, and it's all about power. He's still after the same thing. It's not about love still. He never mentions any affection towards Luke. It's all about power. He wants to overthrow Palpatine. He wants to be a number one, and he wants Luke to rule next to him. And Luke, again, it's questionable about what is his emotional attachment to Luke in this film. It doesn't seem to be much. Again, Luke is merely a means to an end. He's a perfect Sith. He is, you know, he wants to overthrow his master, and Luke is a means to that more than, you know, a son to him. So,
right.
But, well, so, I think that's it for Empire.
I think so. Yeah. You said you had 3 for Jedi, correct?
I do, and I believe you said you had 4, right?
I have 2.
2, yeah. Wow. Okay, wow, I'm way off. All right, well, all of mine happened to come right towards the end of the film. Again, I love the Jabba's palace sequence. I love the inner, you know, the middle of the film where we basically everything is tied together. You know, all the loose ends are tied up on Dagobah. But those are not any of my memorable scenes or most favorite scenes. So I'll jump in with my first one.
Let me just get one of mine out of the way.
Please.
Because it is from the beginning of the movie. It's from the Jabba's palace sequence. So let me just get that out of the way.
Sure. You love Jedi rocks, don't you?
Actually, I'd like it. I do like it a lot. I didn't grow up listening to Lofty Neck, so sorry, everybody. Jedi Rocks was my introduction to Jabba's Palace, so take that as you may. But but the Rancor scene was something that always captivated me and had my imagination. Maybe this is a little disturbing, kind of like you and Han's torture scene. I don't know. But it was just something that it's monster fighting at its best. And I compare any monster fight than any other movie that I see to this scene, to the Rancor scene with Luke in the Rancor's pit. And it's, I don't know why, but that scene is always, and the Rancor is the iconic Star Wars monster.
Absolutely.
Star Wars creature. So, I mean, there are several. I mean, you've got the Wampa, the Space Slug, you've got the Sarlacc, but you always have the Rancor in there as well, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah.
And I don't know why I like it so much, but that scene is always one of the ones that I make sure I watch when I put Jedi in.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, it is, and it's a great scene. I love the Rancor. It's such a great, great monster, as you said, you know, and the Blu-rays, they've done an awesome job. I mean, it looked awesome from the 1983 version, but now it looks even better the way that they cleaned it up. But the Rancor is just, it's a great scene, and I love it. One of my favorite parts actually about the scene is after Luke has killed the Rancor, and the fat Rancor keeper comes in, you know, the guy with that immaculate chest of hair comes running in, And he just starts crying. And, you know, the Rancor was his pet. I mean, it was his favorite creature. And I don't know if you've ever read the Tales from Jabba's Palace
book. I have.
And I love the Rancor Keeper story. And you really, after reading that, so those of you who have not read that story, let me recommend that for you. I'm not going to spoil it for you too much here. But it's a great story, and you really feel for the Rancor Keeper in that scene. And you actually even, you come to have a different understanding of the Rancor. I mean, in the film, it's meant to just be this awful beast that kills people. But there's something more to it. And, you know, you even get tapped into that when, again, that extremely handsome Rancor Keeper comes running in.
I don't know why, you know, more guys don't dress up as him for like conventions and things like that.
Oh my God.
He would have all the slave Leias following him.
Jason, I think that's a great idea. I'm going to work on my my beer belly between now and C6 and crafting the perfect chest hair just so I can be the Rancor Keeper. Oh, great.
All right. Let me just go ahead and throw my last Return of the Jedi out there, because basically the last sequence I have for Return of the Jedi is the Battle of Endor. From the moment Han shoots his way into the bunker control room to the Death Star exploding, that whole long entire sequence is just amazing. And I will let you go into more detail with your moments, because I'm guessing most of them are from that time frame.
Indeed they are. So yeah, like you, yeah, and it's a great way to end the Star Wars films too. I mean, this huge battle, we've got space, land, and duel. You know, I mean, it's exactly the perfect combination, and it's just so well done. The part that the first thing I was even going to mention, it's again, it's part of this, is the space battle. I love the space battle in Jedi. It's awesome. I mean, I had so many high hopes for the opening space battle and Revenge of the Sith, and it's good, but it's, you know, it focuses too much on Obi-Wan and Luke, Obi-Wan and Anakin, which I know why it does, but I was hoping to see more of the capital ships going at it and more fighter exchanges. And the space battle over Endor is just phenomenal. We have, you know, we see the TIE Interceptor for the first time, which I think is a great-looking ship. We see the Mon Calamari Star Cruisers, which are just awesome. Not to mention Admiral Akbar in the most famous line.
It's a trap!
Exactly. Right from the get-go, it's so cool. And that scene where the Millennium, you know, we get the scene of the viewport of the Millennium Falcon flying into these TIE fighters. I can't wait for that in 3D. That's going to be awesome. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
And that's just... Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, the space battle in Jedi is my favorite space battle in all of Star Wars. Obviously, the one in Revenge of the Sith is just amazing, but it's too jam-packed for me. There's too much going on in each frame for me to put it above Jedi. It may be more intensive as far as, you know, all the laser fire and all the explosions everywhere, but the one in Jedi, there's just so much riding on each of these battles in Jedi for the Rebellion. I mean, this is the last-ditch effort for the Rebels. They have to have everything go exactly right, otherwise they are finished.
Absolutely.
The Emperor's on the Death Star. They can blow up the Death Star, they will kill the Emperor, and that will start the crumbling of the Empire as we know it. And so they have to do this, because if that Death Star ever comes online, then they are sunk.
Right.
So,
absolutely, yeah. And again, there's, you know, in Revenge of the Sith, to me, the battle is almost background to Anakin and Obi-Wan. But in Return of the Jedi as well, one of my favorite, you know, side characters is Wedge. I love Wedge. He's fantastic. And to see him to get, you know, kind of be why he is the leader of Rogue Squadron is phenomenal. It's just great, and you see like these awesome capital starships just hammering it out at each other, and it's a great sequence.
Medical Frigate is one of my favorite capital ships.
The Nebula Frigate.
The Nebulon B Frigate is one of my favorite capital ships. So it's and the one shot that they have where it's going side to side with the Star Destroyer, and they're exchanging fire with all the starfighters flying between them. is one of my favorite shots in the entire space battle over Endor. So
yeah, and I love it too. Wedge is heading for the medical frigate. Why is the medical frigate in the battle, Wedge?
Well, in case somebody starfighter is, you know, gets hit and yeah. they can make it there. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I love it. It's great. So yeah, the other part of the scene that I was going to mention is, of course, following up from Empire's. The final duel between Luke and Vader. It's a phenomenal scene, but my favorite part is the very end of the duel. You know, I've heard a lot of people talk about this, but the music, the choir. This is the first time in Star Wars you have a choir in the music. I mean, of course they use it excellently in Duel of the Fates, but in that scene when Luke, you know, gets pissed off, when Vader says, you know, I'm going to go after your sister, and then the choir rises and Luke just attacks with such tremendous anger and hatred. It's so awesome. And, you know, and the tables have turned. Vader, you know, Empire, he's in control. But now Luke, this is all Luke's shots. Luke's calling the shots now.
Right, right. And that it's interesting. The music that was in that section is very interesting because if you listen to it, just the music by itself, it's kind of muted except for the volume. There's not a lot going on. It's, you know... basically just the choir with, you know, some slight instrumental undertones, but it just the way that it rises into that scene, it just sort of focuses all of your attention on what's going on and what is really driving these characters in the scene. So it's a great moment,
right,
in that battle.
Yeah, and my favorite part again is actually right as it finishes and the Emperor is going to invite Luke to take Vader's place. And I'm going to play that scene really quickly because I love the way Luke responds to the Emperor's request.
Okay.
Your hate has made you powerful. Now, fulfill your destiny. Take your father's place at my side. Never. I'll never turn to the dark side. You failed, Your Highness. I am a Jedi, like my father before me. So be it, Jedi.
I love that. This scene, the reason I enjoy it so much is because Luke is claiming his identity. This is where Luke says, I am a Jedi. He looks down at Vader's hand, notices the fear that he experienced in the cave on Dagobah is coming true if he's not careful. He sees, and then he looks at his own hand, his own mechanical hand, and realizes, I'm becoming what I hate. I don't hate my father. I don't even hate the Emperor. I hate the darkness that's inside of all of us. And he finally realizes, you know, what they never realized in Episode 3, that the only way to defeat this evil isn't with a lightsaber, it's not with guns, it's not with weapons, but it's surrender. It's this self-gift. Luke is going to lay himself down in front of Vader here and show him what life is really about. I love it. Luke claims his identity. I am a Jedi. You know, he's not going to turn to the dark side. And by throwing his weapon away, he finally gets it. He gets, I love it in the Revenge of the Sith novel. It's not talked about in the film, unfortunately, but Yoda realizes as he's losing to Palpatine in the Senate chamber, he realizes that violence and weapons themselves are actually the tools of the dark side. So you can't use them to defeat the dark side. You just fuel their fire. And Luke here figures that out on his own. He realizes, you know, that's not what's going to save my father. That's not what's going to save the galaxy. He lays his weapon aside because he loves his father. He won't kill him. He won't do what the Emperor wants. And he claims who he is, which I love that scene. And to connect it even to the scene in A New Hope, Luke's looking off into the future and what he can become. And this is the scene where Luke finally tells us who he is. He is a Jedi. and he realizes what a Jedi is called to do. And I love that scene.
I always knew that that was a very, very important scene. That was always a very, very good scene and one scene that I very liked, but I've never heard it quite explained that way, and that's a really, really good explanation. I really like that, how he's claiming his identity. That's I've never heard it explained that way. That's really good. I like that.
Yeah. So,
and obviously, that seriously, seriously ticks off the Emperor, because so be it, Jedi. You know, even the Emperor has to acknowledge the identity.
Right.
But you can just see in his face how furious he is at the whole situation, because Palpatine is a puppet master. He's a master planner. And for the first time, for the first time in decades, something has not gone exactly according to plan.
Exactly. Yes, and I love that. You know, I mean, at the beginning of Jedi, when he comes aboard the Death Star and he says to Vader, you know, everything's proceeding as I have foreseen it. The Emperor is his biggest flaw. Even as Luke says, your overconfidence is your weakness. His biggest flaw is he full-heartedly thinks he is in control of the destiny of the galaxy. He calls every single shot. And here it is, like you said, this is the first time things are not going according to plan. And again, it just goes to show, you can have as much power as you want. You can have all the power in the galaxy, but life is about freedom. It's about choice. And Luke exercises his freedom to make the choice to say no to that temptation. And I love that scene.
It's a very good one. It's a very, very good one.
So if you're cool, I'll just finish it with my one last little scene. And again, it's right as the battle's ending. It's the scene where Luke takes the mask off of Darth Vader.
Ooh.
And he takes the mask off of Anakin Skywalker, I think is a better way to understand it. He's taking off what has hidden Anakin Skywalker from the galaxy for over 20 years. So I'm going to, real quick, if you don't mind, Jason, I'm going to play that scene where they talk right before he dies.
Go for it.
And you can hash that one out, and that's good for me. So here we go.
Luke, help me take this mask off.
But you'll die.
Nothing can stop that now. Just for once, let me look on you with my own eyes.
Leave you here. I've got to save you.
You already have, Luke. You were right about me. Tell your sister. You were right.
Father. I won't leave.
So, I love that scene because, like I said, this is the removal of the mask of Anakin Skywalker, and he's redeemed now. And I love this because Luke is still determined to save him, literally just physically save his life. And Anakin says, you have saved me. You know, I can finally leave this world as who I once was. I ceased to be Anakin Skywalker. But because of the love of his son, he is redeemed. And I love that scene. And I love the way it's filmed because, again, Mark Hamill is a very convincing actor. And, again, he's lost everything in the series of these three films. You know, A New Hope, he loses his aunt and uncle. In Empire, you know, he finds out this horrible truth about his father. And now in Jedi, he's now lost, you know, Yoda, and now he's lost his own father. And I love the music they play there. They play Darth Vader's theme, but it's like this very sad, they play it very sadly. John Williams is such a genius. And you watch as Luke just, you know, these tears softly streak down his face, and you just, you can't help but feel pain for him because he gave him his whole self to save his father, and now his father's gone. And I just love that film, because that part of the scene, because Anakin has finally returned because of Luke.
Right, right. And it's something where in Empire, Luke goes to face Vader with a very clear mindset. He's going to defeat this monster. And then, of course, that's turned on its head. But in Jedi, he also has a very, very clear goal in mind when he goes and meets Vader again. And that is to redeem his father. And through basically sheer willpower, Luke has defeated the Emperor and redeemed the galaxy's, you know, biggest, you know, bad guy by redeeming him back to his former glory, all in one swift stroke, you know. So it's something. Luke obviously ends up the victor here. This is Luke's moment to claim victory, but all he cares about is getting this man that he's, you know, learned to accept as his father, and redeemed him back to his father. All he wants to do is take him home. But Vader is content. He is at home now because he is now no longer Vader. He's Anakin.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, it's Luke is the character who gets it in all six films. Of all the characters, all the, you know, the wisdom of Yoda, you know, the wisdom of Obi-Wan, the, you know, the power of Anakin, Luke is the one who gets it. And I love that. I mean, Luke essentially saves his father because of his love. And it's almost funny because what's there to love? You never knew your father. Your father cut your hand off just a few months ago, and he's been this horrible monster to the galaxy, yet Luke knows of the goodness inside of him and does everything he can to bring that out, even if it would cost him his life.
Right, right. And that's the one thing that I think is such a great character trait of Luke, is that, especially as he's developed as a character over these movies, is that at this point in time, he is not willing, he will not hate anyone. He just will not. He has made that choice to not hate anyone. And Vader is someone who he has decided to love because of who he was.
Right.
Even though he never knew him back then, he wants to. He wants to bring that back and bring that into the present. And he has decided to love him because of that. And so it's something that I'm sure that everybody could learn from, is that, I mean, it's such a great, great character trait, and that it's something that people should try and emulate, in my opinion. So
absolutely. So for me, those are my memorable moments of the original trilogy.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I just thought of one more that I want to throw in there. Sorry, that's all right.
Please.
And it's right. This one is a bit more lighthearted to wind this out. And it's after the Death Star has blown up. And it's the scene between Han and Leia on Endor. You know, Han tries to reassure Leia. I'm sure Luke wasn't on that thing when it blew. And Leia's like, no, he wasn't. I can feel it. And Han's like, oh, okay, great. I'm really sticking my foot in it this time. I've been out of it for a little while, and they're in a relationship, so.
Yeah.
So, but obviously, my favorite moment of that sequence is when she's like, he's my brother, and she goes to kiss him, and he's, you know, it's not making sense at first, and she's kissing him, and he's not even kissing back, but all of a sudden his eyes realize what's going on. And,
yeah.
You know, it's, I think that's just a really funny moment for me, and it is one of my favorite moments from the end of Jedi. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and the end of Jedi itself is just so great. I mean, Empire ends so horribly, but they're so full of hope. And at the end of Jedi, everything is just so full of joy. You know, and that's capitalized by, you know, the emergence of the Force ghosts of Anakin and Yoda and Obi-Wan. And Luke is content, and he is with his friends. And everything he wanted is where it is because of the sacrifices he made. And I just love it. It ends so, so well.
Yeah, indeed. It does. And I actually watched the end of Jedi this afternoon before we recorded, and obviously I had the DVD version with Hayden Christensen in there as the Force Ghost, and watching it today, when there's the one shot of all the Force Ghosts standing there looking at the celebration, that just gave me chills. It was such a great shot. Even, I mean, I know a lot of people don't like the fact that Hayden Christensen is now the Anakin at the end of the film.
Mm.
But it just, it's still, whether or not you agree with the fact that Hayden should be there, it is still such a great moment. And it still set chills down my spine. And I'm of the camp that I agree with the change that George made there in that case. But that's another topic for another day.
Absolutely. But yes, it is. It, like you said, it's a great scene to see them looking on the victory of the, you know, the Alliance. The victory of good. You know, it's great.
And I think that is why I like Jedi more than I like Empire. Because good triumphs. Mm. And I think that is... Empire is great from a film perspective, from a, you know, character perspective, but from just the enjoyment of the movie, I think Jedi is my favorite, because good, from, you know, improbable odds, overcomes and is victorious. So
sure, yeah, a great way of putting it.
So.
Awesome, Jason, it's been fun.
It has.
But before we go, we do have a new segment we're going to be introducing at the end of the show today, and it'll be a segment we're going to be running with basically until we burn it out. But what we're going to start doing is at the end of each episode, we're going to just start coming up with just some fun ideas of lightsaber matches we would like to see. You know, somebody maybe from the OT fighting somebody from the PT, and just something fun to think about. So the way it's going to work is at the end of each episode, you know, either Jason or I will introduce the fun matchup, you know, for the week. And what we'd like you guys to do is write us emails about who you pick. Who do you think would win in that lightsaber matchup? And at the beginning of the next episode, we'll give our 2 cents and hopefully have some of your 2 cents to add to the conversation. So we will be calling this segment the lightsaber matchup of the week. So this week, we would like to introduce a matchup between Luke Skywalker, who we've talked much about today, and, of course, somebody who's been in the news a lot lately, the one and only Darth Maul. So who do you think would win, Luke Skywalker or Darth Maul? Please give us your feedback. Shoot us an email, write to us on Facebook. Again, you can find us on Facebook at the Wampa's Lair Podcast, and our email is wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. So we'd love to hear from you. The more feedback we get, the more fun we can have with it.
So and we do want to make sure that you know that Luke Skywalker is from the original trilogy,
right,
not the surrounding EU, because we want to keep it somewhat of a fair contest.
Exactly, yeah. If we're talking about Luke from, you know, Legacy of the Force era, well, hands down, we know who will win. So we're thinking more of just, as far as the movies go, who do you think would win? Why do you think they would win? Give us some of your thoughts, and we'll have some fun with that at the beginning of the next episode. And also, Jason, isn't there a potential little fun guest that's going to introduce us next week? Isn't that there a possibility of that?
There might be. I have to talk to him real quick. But we might be getting somebody to do a nice little intro for us. I gotta get my contacts in order, but look forward for that.
Yes, so please tune in next week to the Wampa's Lair. And Jason, send us off, my friend.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to the Wampa's Lair podcast. I'm your co-host, Jason, in for myself and Carl. Join us next time in the Wampa's Lair.